come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Mmm, sounds good.
Hello and welcome to Uncle Mo's Family Feedback, wrote through the dizzying highs, the terrifying lows, and the creamy middles of The Simpsons seasons 1 to 12 through random episode generation. I'm of course your host, Tyler McRae, and joined with me many times before and many times in the future to come is the Impact Sub themselves there, Sash Steele. And whilst we're getting to this little preamble, I felt like I went through every single thing, but like a lot of people do in the downtime, Sash here likes to consume all types of media there, you know, original series, limited series, sequels and that, but I don't know how much they absolve prequels, so in downtime I gave them the not even so much the task, the recommendation of watching a fine piece of work from one of Britain's best comedians, That Peter Kay Thing. And so, Sash, what could you tell the fine folks at home, the report on Peter Kay's prequel, if you will, there? Does it hold up?
Oh, mate, it was so good. Definitely some episodes stronger than others. The Ice Cream Man Cometh was, like, some of the best television I've ever seen. It was hilarious. Also a big fan of the O2 Arena security bit. And obviously the kind of prototype Phoenix Knight was great. Pretty solid all around. Some like real, real brilliant episodes in there, and would definitely recommend watching the whole thing. And they are pretty accessible online at the moment until they get taken down. So don't know if I'm allowed to promote that criminal shenanigans on the podcast, but I just wanted to let the people know.
Oh yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say is I'd recommend it to everyone personally. I'll watch the pilot, which isn't part of the original run. It's the services, and you got Peter Kay's like three or four different people. So one is this Pearl, who's he's a very convincing woman, by the way. I don't know about you. He gets his Eddie Murphy Nutty Professor on, and he looks like a really convincing middle-aged woman there, and a couple of others. That's amazing. Essentially, the club, which became Phoenix Knights, that's very good. The Ice Cream Man Cometh, which may be my favourite one there, because he's so good at portraying anger.
That like, was literally
fits in that. It's amazing.
That scene where he's being interviewed down the street and he kicks over the bin and he's talking about his dad. Like literally, that is the bit that is stuck in my mind the most. It's so good. Like he really looks like he's losing it, but also, you know, it's genuine anger, but it's also still funny as hell, which I think is a difficult line to tread. But he does a really good job of it. Like you really, really feel like he's like angry. Yeah, but it's also just hilarious.
What's this? Milk?
I came as quick as I could.
Looks like it and all. What a fuck are these, eh?
Can you mind your language, please?
They didn't have any flakes.
I want flakes. I can't make 99s with fucking crunchies,
look,
can I?
I told you to watch your language.
Here, have some ice cream. Have some, eh? You stupid bitch. Fuck off. Hey, all of you, get out of here. Fucking don't need this, do I?
The day has been a disaster for Mr. Softytop.
So we've got a corker for you here, folks, as we review Season 8, Episode 22's In Marge We Trust There, directed by Stephen Dean Moore, written by Donick Carey, with the original air date being April the 27th, 1997, and the couch gag being Homer sees a vending machine, puts coin in the slot, tries to get the couch, kicks it, and the couch crushes him there. And as I say, for all my guests here, Sash, have you got any nostalgic memories for this one, or you know, where does this one rank there? Did you see it a lot on Channel 4 growing up recently? What's your preliminary thoughts on this one?
Well, Tyler, I happen to own, as a young one, the Simpsons Heaven and Hell VHS compilation, which contains...
Oh, damn.
Such classic episodes as Homer the Heretic, Treehouse Horror 4, Bart Sells His Soul, and this fine episode In Marge We Trust. So this one is something that I watched more times than I care to count as a kid. And so when I watched it again, this is the first time I watched it in years, and I remembered basically every line, word for word, with the exact cadence and the timing. And I was like, oh my God, this is like seeped into my brain deep. very, very fond memories. I was very happy to be watching it again. It's one of my favourites, actually, probably of all time, and probably the nostalgia is part of that, but also I think it's such a tightly plotted episode. It is just very, very good. Rapid-fire jokes, like Simpsons at its best, in my opinion.
Really? So this might be your top one there, or at least, you know, top three. They'll be fighting for each other there. Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, I don't think I could possibly narrow down how many hundreds of Simpsons episodes there are, or even if we just do like 1 to 12. To a top three, there's just too many. It's like asking to choose my favourite. God, I don't know. My favourite, oh, I don't know. I've not got anything else. But like, you know, if I had children, it'd be like asking me to choose a favourite child. There's just so many.
Wow.
But it would definitely be it is one of my all-time favourites, I think. It's a great episode. Everything on this VHS compilation actually was very good.
Right, because this is end of golden era, so to speak, there. You know, if you ask, I guess, any fans on Twitter, it's the typical, oh, you know, 3 to 8, boom, that's it, could do no wrong. And this is one of the very last episodes of season 8. Some for myself, what did I used to watch on repeat? Season 3, 4, definitely, used to rinse those DVDs. This one, I watched this for the first time in my teens, so this was a very late one. Just because it never got shown that much in syndication with Channel 4, which is surprising. But yeah, this was like a late one for me, as far as collection of DVDs and actually watching it there. But I'm surprised, we'll get into the depths more, I'm surprised at how good this episode is, because I feel like it doesn't get talked about enough, whether it's because of the subject matter or the sole focus is on, I guess, Reverend Lovejoy and Marge. You know, it's a Marge episode there. But I don't know anyone who doesn't like Marge there. I know people that are, you know, 50-50 on Lisa there, just because of how they write her, or, you know, her views, her militant views, so to speak, if there is such a thing there. But, yeah, I don't see this one come up much in a contention or conversation, but I thoroughly enjoyed this one, Sash.
Nice. Yeah, for sure. Me too. I guess the other thing for me is that it was pretty formative. And now that I think about it, I think The Simpsons in general was pretty formative in sowing the seeds of, oh yeah, like church is not really that great, actually. And I mean, I was, you know, I was forced to go to church as a kid. I was brought to church as a baby, as a kid, because it was just what we did. And I pointed out to Tyler, we'll get to it later in the episode, but Lisa's quote of like, celebrating like just after Sunday church, like it's the longest possible time before more church. And I used to quote that, like, you know, you just quote The Simpsons because you quote The Simpsons. It's funny, like the timing's great, it sticks in your head. And it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, this is one of the things. It's like, ah, oh, yes, sowing the seeds of
them. Family glares on.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. My mother was a Marge in that moment for sure.
We start this one off with the kids early in the morning, trying not to wake up the parents, and watching some Itchy and Scratchy there, deaf comedy blam. And so we've got Itchy here going into the ear trauma ward there, where Scratchy's had some surgery on his ears, takes the cotton out, sticks a big old stethoscope down there, runs it all the way to get on a flight and all the way to France, where they're doing a nuclear bomb test and of all things. You hear a little countdown in French, and then the nuclear bomb goes off. The sound travels all the way from France across the Atlantic Ocean through Hollywood and then all the way to the hospital. Love the animation on Scratchy just turning into a big plushie or a big Funko Pop head before he explodes. And then you get a nice little dog going shh like that. Very good punchline that. It may be my favourite Itchy and Scratchy because I'm not, you know, they are what they are. I can give or take them there. But I quite like this one. It was very cute, but it was quite funny as well.
It amused me that the bomb was viewed off the coast of France. It was like, assured we bombed the nucleic or whatever on the sign. I don't know, just like made me laugh. But yeah, no, this is a great one. I love that panning up shot after as well, with the where you kind of see the sideways pan up through the house from Bart and Simpson, Bart and Lisa up to the rafters, up to the bedroom.
Yeah, and the kids just can't contain their laughter there as they end up creasing. This wakes Marge up and she realises, oh my god, we're going to be late for church. Kids, everyone, quick. But it's fine, Sash, because she dressed the night before.
That made me laugh. Like, again, like, rapid-fire jokes in here. It's just like, it's so silly, but it's great. And, you know, from an animation and writing perspective, you know, cuts out a whole scene of Marge struggling to get ready for church. So great, very efficient. But yeah, this made me laugh.
I remember once, I think I was about to have the start of some horrible cold, and I don't know why I woke up at like 4 a.m. and I must have been in some odd little blur in my head. I went, "Oh right, it's school time. I'll get my clothes on," and then I just went back to bed. And then I woke up and I'd sweated in my school clothes, but my alarm went off and my mum went, "Mate, are you getting up?" I went, "Oh," and I went, "Why am I in my clothes?" I was so confused. And then, like, and I've never forgiven her. She made me go to school and then end up spewing at like 11 a.m. And it's like, right, I think it's best we go home. And I was just going, "I told you, why would I sleep in my clothes? I knew there was something wrong with me." Like, oh God, don't ever do that, Sash. It's just, I don't know why it happened, but oh God. So yeah, I was very much like Marge with this, only I was very much really ill.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the Simpsons do nothing if not nail observations of the human condition, right?
Oh yeah, even with Homer just wanting some few more Z's in bed there, he's I've got a lot of work around the bed to get to, but
Sash, oh, that's another quote.
You. Yeah, go on.
For an hour a week. Well, in that case, he should have made a week an hour longer. Lousy God. Again, so much of this. I was like, just saying it as it was happening. This is a wonderful nostalgia trip.
I love it, pointing out these little flaws and his little frowny face as he's trying to sleep as well. So the family begrudgingly go to church there, where Reverend Lovejoy is hardly setting the world alight with his sermon there, just going through, you know, the 9 tenets of constancy in a very drony voice. And Homer's still thinking of his bed as he lets out a big yawn. Fuck me. Dan Castellaneta with this bit. Like, this is why he's one of the goats, people. Just the little yawn. And then the realism. We were talking about Peter Kane, a little preamble with anger. Dan Castellaneta doing Homer angry or like pained is exquisite.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can see that in real life. Just the damn it! Like I'm surprised. Like part of me wanted him to slip him like a fuck. Like I can just see it, and it's so loud. Like it's a great slice of life, Stash.
Yeah, 100% agree. Great delivery.
And the very same goes for Ezekiel, which brings us back to our starting point. The 9 tenets of constancy.
Damn it!
Well, I seem to have lost my place. So I'll start over.
Aw, for the love of crumb cake.
But the sermon goes on hour after hour, as essentially the whole congregation's bored, or sleeping, or dozing off. And so, Lovejoy, annoyed by this, decides to wake him up there. Did you spot the 3 different alarms he's got?
I did not. Do you want to point them out for me? Missed that detail.
Yes, I shall. There's bird, ambulance, and disco whistle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very intrigued for the disco whistle there, because we hear the bird, the ambulance you can think of, but what would the disco whistle be? I'm intrigued.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe just a disco stew. Going hoo-hoo or something. I don't know. Or not.
So the family escape church and Homer, Lisa and Bart can't wait to start their Sunday right now. Now, as someone who's, again, you said was in church a lot throughout their young upbringing. Were you very much like this when you left church as soon as? Were you getting on with your, I don't know what figurines you had, but were you playing with them? Were you doing your own Simpsons comics there? What were you doing?
Yeah, I mean, just found a bunch of my old Simpsons comics when clearing out, so definitely was reading some of those bad boys, you know, playing with Legos, all that fun stuff. Around this age, and I was watching this, playing with Pokemon, running outside, going on my bike, all the classic stuff of a 90s childhood, pre-internet.
Now, did you obviously, you know, didn't stick with the church thing, but did you find it stuffy, insufferable there? Or were there bits you like, well, like this bit, but why you've got to go every Sunday? Can't it be like a, you know, monthly thing there? Get your orange juice and squash instead of your Blood of Christ and a communion wafer there. Did you like bits of it, or was it just a bigger drag?
It was just boring. I mean, I don't know if you're going to cut in the episode, the thing I said from earlier, or do you want me to repeat it here? But church was fucking boring. I mean, I did like altar server stuff just to give myself something to do. But yeah, it was always boring. You know, I mean, I liked kind of being fussed over by the old ladies, and I liked the Sunday school bit where you got to do colourings and not actually be in the main church bit. But yeah, I mean, I can't really look back on it with anything other than like a vague nostalgia, but also like, and you know, would never do it again. Wasn't like torturous, but it was just a strange time. Yeah, and then as you get older and you sort of realise that actually like this is an institution that harms people, and also it's still boring, and it's more and more boring now that I am a teenager and I could do better things on my Sunday. But hey ho. So yeah, you know, it's had it, it had its pros and cons, but yeah, would not opt in again.
With Sunday school, I'm assuming you were colouring in. What kind of radical colour did you paint Jesus instead of, like, I assume white? Because it wouldn't be any other colour, would he, folks?
wasn't that radical thinking as a child? Very much
surrounded. I feel like you would paint in blue or red, something radical.
Oh no! Oh yeah, he's a Smurf. You know, he's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Nah, never quite. Never quite had that moment of bonkersness.
It's great though, Sash, because you know now it's the longest time till they have to go to church again. Mm-hmm. And you know, you should really be thankful for church. You should cleanse your soul and you know do better. It should, but it doesn't. Now, who wants to go to the dump?
Who's going with Daddy to the dump? Yay! Amazing.
Now, I don't know about you, but this is a very vivid memory for me, because any excuse, my dad would love to go down to the dump. Not only to just do, well, to dump, but also to just see what was available for free. And we had a fairly big, we've still got a fairly big dump in my hometown there, but he got for me one of my bikes there. He got like a television stand-up set. He got fucking God knows how much, but like, and he cleaned about half of them, Sash. So I mean, Jesus Christ, what came into our house there? And he only cleaned about half of them down, because the other stuff was like, it's granite, it's fine, the bacteria doesn't stick to granite. Yeah, of course it fucking doesn't. Jesus, just give it a little Mr. Muscle down, Dad, it's not hard, come on. But yeah, he loved picking through shit like Homer did here. Was that a thing for you growing up, going to the dump and finding little, I don't know, bikes or old toys there or anything?
Nope.
Oh. Full stop. All right, fair enough.
It was not. yeah, no, sorry, I got nothing there like to add. That wasn't a thing. We'd take stuff to tip, drop it off, and then that was it. I mean, I've done that at least like more so later on, but yeah, no, not really a thing.
So Marge, being ousted by her family while they go to the dump, decides to go back to the church and do a little bit more, maybe, or speak to the Rev. But I keep forgetting about this quote. Can you believe it? They only give you 5 Q's and 2 U's. What a world! Like, what a small problem, but great delivery there.
I love Joey's voice. There's just something so, I don't know, there's just something so appealing about it. Like, his cadence is just great. I love it.
Well, he's very much, I'm a big fan of American South accents there. And it's very much Bible Belt, you know, was it Pestilence and, you know, Seventh Day, was it Fire and Brimstone kind of thing. You know, you shall pay me and you will not go to hell. Like, reminds me of all the televangelists, that's what I'm thinking of. He's got a little drawl of that, and I love that southern accent there. You know, being a big wrestling fan, Simpsons fan, and you know, documentary fan and all, and you know, you go to those bits of the area, it's not a million miles removed. The Reverend Lovejoy's in real life. If anything more extreme there, there could be a bit more Lovejoy-esque there. So yeah, I very much love his voice there. I like him as a tertiary character. I think he works very well.
Yeah, definitely, 100% agree.
So Marge says, well, you know, as much as we like pittance and consonants and abstinence themes, we should be doing more to reach out to people. And Lovejoy goes, well, I don't see you volunteering. Okay, I volunteer. Oh, well, wasn't expecting that. Again, it's just these subtle little bits there, but he puts it to work. We got the kids and Homer down at the dump now. They managed to dump the Christmas tree, even if the majority came off in the car there. But it's all right. They're up for some scrounging.
I do love that bit where he pulls the tree out of the window. I always think the texture of that must have been so satisfying. Like all that dried like fur coming, like pine needles coming off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Ooh. That's my intelligent input for this episode.
Homer ends up, I don't know what the fuck he's finding or why he thinks it's useful, but oh, this is a perfectly good half of a basketball there. And Lisa thinks she finds a Malibu Stacy, you know, with no head, but the body's still good. And a little rat pops out, scares her. Homer takes a laugh at her being scared. And a little raccoon pops out and just goes straight for his eyes. And he's down on the floor, fucking hell, asking for help.
This is a great gag. Help me, Lisa. Oh my God. Amazing.
But Bart cuts through them and says, oh my God, you guys, there's something here you're not going to believe. And they come across something in the dump, Sash.
Oh, I mean, this is the turning point of the episode, isn't it? This is where it all really starts to accelerate plot-wise. A mysterious empty box with Japanese writing and a very familiar face as its logo.
What the heck is that? Maybe it's a box from the future.
It looks Japanese.
What's going on? Why am I on a Japanese box? Which looks like that? Oh my God, what is that?
Yes, Homer picks up this bright, colourful box and realises his own face is on there. I like how they didn't have him get annoyed, like he's genuinely scared and paranoid, and he starts whimpering, like, what's this doing here? Why is my face on a box? And this is the start of one of the most surreal B stories ever, and the start of one hell of a meme, and one hell of a, you've done art and you've done your own sketches and commissions and all that. How would you rate Mr. Sparkle as a design, Sash?
I mean, I guess we're getting Homer's design, more or less. Pretty solid, pretty iconic. If I had to blend a fish and a bulb, that's more or less what I'd do, I imagine.
We're back at the church now, and Marge has been doing the errands there, sweeping everything up. Oh, you won't believe how many dead pigeons are in the Orion. Oh, God.
Great line.
I love Joy has to answer a call there, and it's Principal Skinner. Giving his thoughts out to Lovejoy. I'm having a crisis with Mother here. She blocked up half the TV. We rented Man without a Face. I didn't even know we had a problem. Like, oh, brilliant. Again, just like love these little bits with tertiary characters there. We find out that Lovejoy has lost his love. He lost his passion for the cloth, so to speak. There he goes, well, have you consulted your Bible? No. Oh, well, maybe you should do that. So just palms him off. Marge notices this there. And he just says, oh, you know, well, I was once like you yourself there, Marge. And we get a cool little flashback to the 70s there. You know, the 60s were gone and people were ready to hate themselves again. And I don't know why this is going to be a really out there reference, but just the little bit where Reverend Lovejoy's young in his prime with a little mullet going on in the car with a big nose. For some reason, I don't know why, it's very Postman Pat looking.
I can see it.
Tell you, for some reason, on the reaches of my mind and in the galaxy and the universe, it just looked very Pat going about Greendale or Mrs. Goggins or one of the farmers or that. I think it's just the nose and he's in a car, maybe. I don't know why my brain's gone that way, but just for that little bit, I was like, oh, fuck, that is very Postman Pat. Shit. I don't know why, Sash. Can you understand or am I completely in my own pit? Listeners, please let me know.
I've just Googled Postman Pat for reference and I can kind of see it. Yeah, I know for sure. I mean, he's like, Postman Pat's a bit less mullety, but less mullety, but like, I can see it. I can see it. It's definitely the nose is a big factor. Yeah, Noah, you're not far off the mark there. That's a cinematic parallel if ever I've seen one.
Oh, thank God. Thank God I'm not going mad.
So I was just going to mention that I think the world building and the insight we get into Springfield through those phone calls is just like really fun. And it really fleshes out this episode and kind of just gives you a bit more background and leads really nicely into all the bits that we get later when obviously Marge is listening to people's problems and we get even more glimpses, but it sets it up really nicely. That was all I was going to say. I was just like, oh, I didn't get to say it because like, but yeah, that's fine. That's all I've got.
Please jump in. Please jump in. It's very much Lovejoy's episode there as much as he shares it with Marge.
Very true. Definitely.
Yeah. They do a fantastic world writing his, is it his own canon? What was came before? I'm asking the fanfic writer or aficionado.
What was that? Sorry, what's the question?
I say they're writing his backstory. That'd be the one.
Oh, backstory. There you are. Yeah. You know, it's all adds to the wider
canon.
Yeah, the wider Lovejoy canon. Yeah, definitely. This is some good character building for him. 100%.
There you go. I can relate to Tumblr teens in your vernacular.
Okay. There you go. You got it. No, good job.
I'm not old.
How do you do, fellow kids? Oh, I also want to say how much I love Ned's 70s character design here.
Yes.
It's great.
Even his glasses. His glasses are different as well. He's mm-hmm. fresh-faced. Yeah. As soon as... Lovejoy comes in, makes himself at home at his new parish. Flanders can't even wait, comes through the door. I have a problem, Reverend. Well, sit down and rat with me, brother. That's what I'm here for.
Another quote that lives rent-free in my head. Like, the cadence of it is just so satisfying. Yeah. Like, the way it comes out in one, like, long drone. That is definitely something that I use, I've quoted quite a lot. Anyway, sorry. As you were.
What could be plaguing poor Flanders here?
I was out dancing and my hips slipped and my buttocks came in a contact with the buttocks of another young man.
I see. Like, he does not know what the hell to do with that. And then you get a nice little montage of Ned asking the most mundane, trivial questions throughout the past 20 years or so of Lovejoy's stay with the church. And you get to see Lovejoy, you know, trying to enjoy his train, trying to enjoy his meal, trying to enjoy what seems to be an anniversary in Paris, but Ned keeps on grinding him down. And it's very fitting as well, because I don't think I would have believed it as much if it was just a random, you know, you get the sea captain, I have this, or da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da. You have different members of Springfield, or citizens of Springfield. It's so fitting that it's Ned. It's a lovely touch, Sash.
I agree. And I mean, you know, I know it's kind of the nature of The Simpsons to have every character be kind of an asshole in general, you know, and make stupid mistakes in the name of comedy and stuff. But I felt really bad for Lovejoy here, just seeing that idealistic young man just slowly ground down, as you put it, over the years. I wonder what Ned would think if he knew that this is what he'd done to Lovejoy, and like if he was kind of such a big part of the reason that Lovejoy's as cynical about church as he is these days. I don't know. I feel like Ned would probably freak out and call him more. I feel so guilty. What have I done? Oh my God. Anyway, but yeah.
That's the thing. He's ignorance is bliss, but thankfully it was the 80s and nobody noticed that he didn't care anymore. But again, it's littered with great lines. Even like, might not have massive jokes in it, but it's all these little lines. Marge going, oh, you can't let, you know, X amount of years of bad experience sour you. Oh, of course I can. Like, Jesus. I was very seen to there.
Yeah, me too. It's very just dry. Dry humour. Which I think sometimes you don't get in The Simpsons, but this is a very dry humour episode, which I guess goes hand in hand with Lovejoy, really. But no, this is a great line. Just so dismissive and just like got a little chuckle out of me, definitely.
Oh, is Lovejoy a modern office worker? Because he goes, ooh, when the phone rings, and he goes, you answer it. And Marge has a bit of a panic, but then she ends up picking up the phone. And it's Mo with a problem, so she ends up coming with a pseudonym. This is the listen lady.
Well, listen, lady, I got a problem. I love that transition. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's great.
I have lost the will to live. And then Marge just gives the most blanket, you know, positive plateau answer there. You know, oh, maybe you should work for, you know, NHS Mental Wealth Hill, being, oh, you've got plenty to live for. Oh, really? Oh, great. Lovejoy ever says that.
I mean, considering the caliber of advice that he'd previously been receiving, I feel like this, he probably would have been like, oh, yeah, yeah, actually, you know, that's pretty stellar advice. I think the bar is pretty low for Marge to get into the Listen Lady role. I was going to
say, saying, like, have you tried standing on a bridge? Like, what are you doing?
Right, when you think about the implications of that, yeah. As Lovejoy literally just told him, like, yeah, no, you're right, Ned, you don't really have a lot to live for, so, you know, it's like, damn, that's actually pretty dark.
We're about to go to a little act break there as Marge gets a taste for this as she answers the phone again. And I see this a lot in the meme pages, or just as a little clip getting shared on Twitter, for like best Simpsons moments or best moments. Do you see what I did there, fans? What does nice. Mo call about for the second time?
Oh yeah, this one's about my cat. Shut up and asking it. So good. So good.
So Hank Azaria just does great vice and vitriol in Mo's voice. Mm-hmm. Shut up, I'm at, like,
just the cat meowing off screen is so fucking funny. Like,
probably his only real friend in the bar is a cat, his pet cat. He's, shut up.
That's not what Reverend Lovejoy's been telling me. Wow, you're good, thanks. Hi, it's me again. I got another problem. This one's about my cat. Yeah, shut up, I'm asking her.
So the Simpsons are at the dinner table now. Homer's chastising Marge for not even helping the church, just volunteering in general there. How can you volunteer? Do you believe so-called volunteers don't even get paid?
Do you know so-called volunteers don't even get paid?
What a charitable man.
For sure. It's kind of the things where, like, as a kid, like, I just kind of thought this line was, like, you know, funny or whatever, without even actually really understanding, like, the line, if that makes sense. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, that is a silly line, you know. It's so much of The Simpsons is that for me. It's, like, looking back on the line. I mean, there's a Lenny and Carl one coming up. I'm like, oh, I did not understand that until just now. So, yeah.
Oh, I've made notes on that, Sash, don't you worry.
Of course.
But, like, not even a couple seconds after he's chastising Marge. Marge is busy explaining why she's helping Lovejoy. And then Homer's got the box up yet again. Oh, put that dirty box away. Oh, but Marge, I've still got loads of questions on it. How did it get here? Why am I on it? And Bart, again, in a nice little meta line, hey, if you've got a photo of you, they've probably got hundreds of photos of you. They're probably watching us right now.
Oh, yeah. And then we have some great delivery from Marge's VA here. Nobody is watching us right now. And then we just get the greatest bit of silence where everyone eats the dinner and then continues
and
to look around.
They shiftily look around, don't they?
Such a great moment. Just, like, so funny with just minimal words, you know. It's awesome.
I mean, they're not wrong. To do the old running joke we've got on this podcast of, you know, oh, BuzzFeed article for this. Like, again, Simpsons be predicting fucking, what, Alexas and all that. I mean, for the love of God, I've got tape over my little iMac camera as we speak, as I record this podcast, folks. There, you can't be too careful there. I don't want to see the FBI to see me in my bare chest. Too much shame for that. So Homer goes on a little hunt to find out why he's on this detergent box there. So he goes to the Happy Sumo there. We get Akira, who people might know from season 2, when Homer's about to die from raw sushi. He makes an appearance yet again. He was dealing out Homer raw fish, but now he's going to try and help him find out why the hell he's on a detergent box here. Oh, might as well talk about it now. We get a load of Asian voice acting here, which is grand, and rightfully so. They should be in the Mr. Sparklad and all sorts there. We see him later. Would I surprise you that one of them has been in many animated series, including Jackie Chan Adventures and Samurai Jack.
Oh, winner.
Sash.
Really good stuff. Yes. Yeah, I'm notoriously terrible at recognising voices unless I'm specifically looking out for them. But sweet, awesome, that's cool.
Yes, and as much as I praise the representation here, Is Akira voiced by an Asian actor? No, they got Hank Azaria to do it. It's fine. It's fine, Sash. They couldn't get George Takei in here. It's fine.
They couldn't, you know, they couldn't hire any other voice actor, alas.
We find out through Akira that this is a product called Mr. Sparkle for detergent dishes. He can say, hey, it looks like you. But he promises to be a magnet for foodstuffs there and to band all dirt to the land of wind and ghosts there. That is very Japanese. That is very anime, Sash, there.
It is. I had the exact same thought when I watched this. That's such an anime, or like just a very typical Japan slogan.
Marge is busy kicking off her listen lady career, her little hobby here, and gets Lenny as one of her customers here, saying, oh, you know, I said to wife, I said to Carl, I'm dating a big shot supermodel, but it's not true. I just wanted to say it'd be a big shot. And then Marge initially goes, you know, oh, well, I'm sure he'll think your wife's attractive no matter what. But then do you remember the technique or the little bit of advice Marge gives to Lenny?
When I have to tell my husband something I don't really want him to know, I cook him a great big dinner. By the time he's finished eating, he's stuffed to cut. He's too full and sleepy to care what I have to say. Which is great advice, I think, actually. It would definitely work on Homer. Probably also will work on Carl.
Oh, yeah.
But, the next line is, like, just hilarious to me.
Wow, that's great. When Carl comes over, I'll stuff him till he don't know what's what.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'll do. I'll stuff Carl till he doesn't know what's what. Fucking Jesus Christ.
They really just, like, they were not shy about putting that line in there, were they? Again, never picked up on that as a kid. That's the first time I've watched that and thought, oh, it's a gay joke. That's hilarious. Amazing.
Oh. I have in my physical notes here, ooh, misses. This is very carry on. Kenneth Williams would be turning in his grave. It's fantastic.
Never seen a carry-on film, so... But I can only imagine.
I tell you what, there's only about three good ones there, but I will say Kenneth Williams is the absolute highlight in every single one there. Very proud, very proud gay man, very great comedy actor of his time. Did an animated show called Willow in the Wisp.
Oh, yeah.
In the 80s, if you know, and he does every single voice on that show, and he's an amazing talent there.
Oh,
wonderful,
nice.
Man there. Yeah. Well, please, everyone, look up. I tell you what, don't look up Carry On films, look up Best of Kenneth Williams and Carry On.
Nice.
We'll be laughing for days. There's a load of dated shit, but like just the faces he pulls and the noises, it's fucking fantastic.
There you go. My question for you off the back of the scene is, Lenny and Carl, do you ship it or not, to use the tumbular vernacular, as you put it earlier?
Oh, I absolutely ship it there. They seem ideal and perfect for each other. Two kind of big dopes who work the same job and, you know, go to the same bar and join each other's company. Absolutely. This is like normal life there. It's not even... Again, I'm not in the fanfic there, unlike my recording partner here or... You know, the subcultures there. But as far as, like, oh, shipping these characters, it seems like the most normal, quote, ship pair. Like, they're not both, like... right, cancel me or bury me or whatever. They don't seem very effeminate. They just seem like normal fellas who could be gay. So, yeah, it seems very, like, shippable. It seems very normal life, Sash.
Yeah, like a good, just a regular portrayal of, like, you know... Two guys just being gay sort of thing, you know. I know some people
you
are very...
explained it much better than the vilifying way I did.
You were right. I knew where you were trying to go. I let you amble to the end. And then, I totally get what you mean. I know there's some people who are like, no, they're just friends. Like, the guys clearly weren't doing anything. Like, you know, it's whatever. It's just like... But, I don't know. This has just made me laugh because it's like, oh, yeah, no, they were. They knew what they were doing.
And while Seymour Skinner's had his problem dealt with by Lovejoy, he's in the queue for Marge. Again, littered with great lines here. He's with his mother, and his mother goes, ah, come on, cut the line, Seymour. I want to get in next.
I'm not principal of the queue, mother. And you never will be. Also, big... Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I just love Agnes's delivery. She's great.
I was going to say bigger girls from Monsters, Inc. energy. The receptionist.
Oh, God, yes. Yes,
absolutely. Like, same demeanor. That's what I had. But yeah, such a great exchange there. Again, just like so much fun world building in this particular episode. I like when we see the characters existing just like outside of their personal bubbles, and it's like, oh, they're in a community and like everyone has their own stuff going on, and you really feel it in this episode, and I really appreciate that.
Homer, now knowing the location of this mystery box there, goes to the library to try and call the factory there.
The phone book for Hokkaido, Japan. Thank you. May I please use your phone? Is it a local call? Yes. So funny. Again, sorry, one of the many lines that lives in my head went free. That was not the best own condition. I'm sure you're about to do a better one, Tyler. Feel free to redo it for me.
Oh, no, that was merely bait. I was waiting for you to do that because, again, behind the scenes show here, folks. Yeah, this is one of Sasha's absolute favourite lines. Always repeated, I believe. Or it's one of the ones that stuck with you.
Definitely, just so many in this, like, just lived in my head rent free. But that whole, like, if someone asks me something and I'm, like, trying to deny it or whatever, or like that, yes, like, it's definitely directly from this. And it's, like, I feel like so many people have this thing with The Simpsons where you watch it and then you quote it and you kind of forget that it's a Simpsons quote, but it just becomes, like, a thing that you say. And that is, there are a couple of formative ones in here for me. So yeah. If you ever ask me something and you hear this delivery, it may not be true. Or I'm just doing it for comedic effect, now that you know.
I like the very real thing of him, right, it's 5, 7, 9, and it goes on for like a minute. You see the library clerk like look over, like, is he calling a long number? And then it's the very real thing of, right, I don't want to tell him to leave or that because I'm too, like, socially anxious, so I am going to leave. Just walks off.
The delivery of that, again, so much humour without a single word. That whole scene just cracks me up. Like, it's perfectly done and perfectly framed as well. Like, you just see him out of the corner of the screen. It's like, so funny. Off to unplug the phone before they wipe out the library's monthly budget on an international phone call.
Yeah, there you go. Here's pictures of Tyler making a certain call, and then month's time, end of the bill, my dad's going, what the fuck is Babe Station on the bill? Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
Wrong number there. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't help it, Dad. She was shaking the phone and a few other things. Why couldn't I not?
Oh, my God. Tyler's formative years, ladies and gentlemen and others.
So he ends up phoning the factory. He gets the right one, and he has one of the people on the line, on the factory line, answering, why am I Mr. Sparkle? And he goes, oh, it's an American, quick, you're the only one that knows English. Passes it to the most Americanized Japanese man, maybe, in the factory. And this is Gedi Watanabe, most known for being in 16 Candles. A few other films as well in the 80s, 90s, but then doing, you know, voiceover animated work. He's the one that was in Samurai Jack and Jackie Chan Adventures there. He's been in a couple sitcoms here and there throughout his life. Managed to get regular work, unlike a lot of Asian actors getting typecast. He was initially typecast, but then, you know, he's got the comedic chops and such there. He's managed to get himself a litany of work over the past 40 years, though, or so, Sash there. So, yeah, this is one of the biggest Japanese stars.
Nice, there we go. The more you know. Like I say, not very up on my voice actors unless they're very, very famous and very, very distinctive. So, yeah, really, really cool.
Oh, by the way, just want to give my flowers to, about as far as like Asian actors and voice actors there, Lauren Tom, not only as the wonderful Amy Wan in Futurama, who I had the biggest crush on, but also the amazing Lady Masako in Ghost of Tsushima there. If anyone ever gets to play it there, her story is fantastic, and she does a stellar job there. So I just want to give props to her whilst we're talking about them.
Nice.
We now get Lovejoy in church, giving another sermon there. You know, please praise God, and da-da-da-da-da. And, oh, yeah, the Lord of Marge Simpson, amen! So Marge is becoming the new convert. She's becoming the new reverend in-house, solving all the problems, if you will. And none is more realised then the whole congregation bypassing Lovejoy. and going straight to Marge there for all their ailments and troubles to be listened to there. Now, who has the most urgent problem?
I have a recurring dream in which I'm falling.
Oh, my. Tim, hold my calls.
So funny. Just, again, just, like, really stupid, like, off the wall, like, just silly stuff, you know? It's great. It's so seamless as well, the humour in this. Like, you don't, like, they don't need to pause and be like, oh, that was a joke. You know, it's just played straight, and it's just even funnier for it. It's great.
Lovejoy is sad about this. He realises he's a shepherd without a flock there. And, you thought that Mr. Sparkle was the only surreal bit here. We get, I did enjoy it, but we get a really goofy bit here with the saints in the stained glass windows coming to life there, trying to, well, say give Reverend Lovejoy advice there, but they're very sassy and mean, Sash.
They really are. I really enjoyed this bit. It was great. Yeah, I mean, you know, Saint Eleutherius of Nicomedia was certainly not the friendliest bunch.
Oh, I'm glad you remember that, because I was about to butcher that.
There you are. I did my best. I think I garbled it a little bit, but close enough.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that Catholic upbringing coming in useful there on the names.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. It was all worth it to be right here, right now on this podcast, all the years of sitting bored in church. For you, Tyler, it's made it all worthwhile.
Well, what have you done to keep them, Reverend? That's what we must ask. Well, I had the vestibule recarpeted, and the fellow getting burnt alive goes, I've appeared in 1,000 visions, and that one's the lamest of them all. And then he says, I thought saints were supposed to be friendly. Ooh, your lucky God isn't here. And then they just go back to being stained glass windows. Like, this, I don't know, I never laughed usually that hard when I was a teen watching it, but just the fact that it's the thing of, oh, they're helping him, oh, they're not that helpful, oh, wait, they're actually quite fucking mean and arseholes, like,
right.
It just escalates, it's great.
It's great, it ties into the, I mean, The Simpsons obviously is, like, pretty anti-religion in a very tongue-in-cheek kind of way, you know, and I think this really ties into the theme of this episode so nicely and succinctly that, you know, you could be the most super religious person ever, but you might be just really shit at helping people and actually not that helpful. I mean, it's kind of a very ironic reflection of Lovejoy's whole attitude towards his own congregation for the last, like, 20 years, you know? Yay, thematics! I mean, you can tell I did 1/8 of an English literature degree from that alone, and that I spend too much time analysing stuff for my own podcast, so there we go.
Go for it, there you go. We all stamp that. Marge gets another call as the listen lady. He gets a call from Helen Lovejoy, of all people, saying, oh, well, this is a bit ironic there, but you're good at listening to people. Tim's just come in, and he's just gone downstairs, and he's just playing with his toy set, and he's just aloof and not himself. And Marge, again, just giving, you know, general advice and, oh, you know, people can't be happy 24/7. I'm sure in a couple of days we'll be bouncing back to his normal self. And Helen accepts this. And we pan down, we cut down to Tim looking very sad, wearing a conductor's hat, playing with his trains. And this is really sad. This is perfectly animated, executed, perfect score. It's just great emotional beat here, Sash.
Mm-hmm, I agree. Emotional beat is a very spot on word for it. Yeah.
Attention, HO scale passengers. The dining car is closed. Root beer is still available, but the cost is now $6.50. If the passengers will look to the right, you will see a sad man. That is all.
I'll cut in the audio here because it's just great as well. I'm annoyed, though, because this feels very much like an act break. Like, they're going to do this, and then it's, you know, that is all. And then fade to black, and then come back. But they don't. I don't know why. It just seems very fitting to have this end the second act break. But, it doesn't. I don't know. Personally, I think that's a bit of a slip-up, because it's like, it just seems the perfect way to end it. But then we just jump right into, ending the B-plot here. What did you think?
I hadn't thought about it. I mean, I guess as far as the pacing of the episode goes, we're, what, like 13 minutes in out of 22? It kind of seems like a good time to have a slump emotionally, not in quality, but just in terms of the way the characters are feeling. Mm. Yeah, I guess as far as dividing it rigidly into acts, that's not really how I would think about it. Yeah, I don't know. You know, is this the A plot or the B plot? This is the A plot. Sorry, I totally forgot for a second. I was like, oh, wait, hang on. What's the episode? Whose name is in the episode title? Oh, yeah. but no, it's like, you know, we've kind of been slowly kind of on this downward trajectory of Lovejoy. And then, yeah, it makes sense that we switch to more lighthearted Mr. Sparkle subplot. But yeah, as for the timings, I don't know. I will concede to your expertise on that one. But yeah, I know. I did enjoy that scene though. Like, it's one of the things I do like about this episode is it's hilarious and rapid fire jokes, but it's also got a good message and strong characterization and good world building, and the emotional lows like really help to heighten everything else. You know, it really feels like a story with stakes, but at the same time it's just incredibly funny and often very silly and cynical. It's got it all, honestly. I do just feel like it's such a good episode now that I'm saying that. I'm like, oh my god, it's so good. It's like really got everything. The amount that they cram into the 22 minutes is amazing.
Well, as far as cramming in timing and all that there, we've got the wrap up of I was going to say the most surreal B plot in this series. No, because you know what else was in this season, Sash?
Oh yeah?
The Insanity Pepper episode.
Oh, the jalapenos that we did in the desert and he has the vision. Oh my god, that was bonkers. Yes. Damn.
So, it probably to a close second there, we get a wrap-up of the second most surreal beep whatever. As the family get a package, and whilst Homer's busy looking for the tape through all the peanut packing kernels they're going through, just like a friggin' Gusto box there, like they're horrible for packing. Don't get them subscription food services, folks. They've got horrible zero recycling in there. Much like Homer in his box here. As he gets a VHS tape, Sash.
This is such another good gag where like they fall out in just infinitesimal amounts and then the VHS hits him in the eye. Just so funny. Again, one of the things as a kid where I remember rewinding that often and just laughing at it. You know, it was a different time then. We were limited in what we could watch, so really got me money's worth out of these videos, VHS tapes. Sorry, did you ask me a question then? I was really just fixated on enjoying that scene.
No, that was it. We get the VHS tape there. Lisa pops it in there, sees a big fat Japanese businessman saying, ah, hello, American investor. Thank you for buying Mr. Sparkle franchise. But don't take my word for it. Please watch this commercial. And I don't know how else to say it, but as a white Western man, it's very Japanese, Sash. Please take it away for us.
Oh my gosh, am I negating the whole... this is one of my favourite pieces of the substance.
As the bigger anime
so
fan and of Japanese culture, please.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if they put any actual anime shout-outs in here, anything specific. There's a bit of a magical girl transformation. Okay, let's go. Commercial starts with Japanese woman popping Mr. Sparkle on her kitchen counter, blowing a whistle, summoning the man himself from the box with his spiel. I am disrespectful to dirt. Can you see that I am serious? Mr. Sparkle magically cleans the dishes, sweeps through into the nursery, entertains the baby with the xylophone, then just... bizarre. I don't even know how to describe this. You're gonna have to just watch this, and Tyler will hopefully put in some audio. But cut into an underwater
I'll
scene.
Cut bits in, don't worry.
Oh, it's so good. cut to the bottom of the ocean with three ladies dancing in mini dresses and go-go boots. Mr. Sparkle says, "This is no place for loafers. Join me or die. Could you do any less?" Which just bizarre. What a brave corporate logo.
Like, join me or die.
What's that say? Join me or die.
I think he says join me or die like a death pact.
It's it's so extreme. This whole bit is this is the anime feel. And then I accept the challenge of Mr. Sparkle. casts his magic on them, and they turn from awesome power and a magical girl, a yes. transformation sequence with upbeat music, hearts and sparkles, and Mrs. Sparkle leaves them transformed into sumo wrestlers.
Sorry,
I think.
I'll just jump in because this is my favorite bit.
Go for it. Take it away. You've got it.
It's this like reporter just saying to these two cows in the field. So, any plans for the summer? Just fucking barbershop shit. And then Mr. Sparkle comes on and just like kills them, like very much like a Dragon Ball Z way, like and smack into glass.
It's so inexplicable. It's like it's just nonsense. It's surreal. It's so funny. I'd totally forgotten about that part, actually. It's so good. Oh.
Not to frame myself as an ignorant fan of anime there, but if Mr. Sparkle was some kind of ultimate boss in an anime series, what would be his power level? Or would he be in a filler arc there, Sash? Or is he going to be up there with your Cells or your Freezers or
ooh.
Another series, which I can't think of. I would have said Naruto Bad Guys, but I never watched it.
You're all right. You did pretty well. You impressed me there, actually. I was not expecting such in-depth knowledge of the Dragon Ball Bad Guys. So well done. I was impressed. I don't know. I mean, I think probably more of a novelty boss, but then maybe he's got a dark side. This isn't even my final form moment where he transforms into much more of a bigger eldritch horror. I mean, regardless, I would watch Mr. Sparkle, the anime series, like 100%. If there's ever a spin-off of The Simpsons, that's my vote.
Would you say he's a bit more powerful and more of a nuisance than Mr. Satan, then? I'm trying to get the level on him.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my God. I would definitely watch that that fight. I think he's more competent than Mr. Satan, which is not that hard, honestly. But, he's a couple of cuts above Mr. Satan. Over 9,000, to quote the meme. There you go.
Hey,
you want a number on it.
The meme.
There you are.
There you go.
There you go.
Bring the normies on side. I know that meme.
I understood that reference.
Yeah, so you've just got him spinning around, but I can't think of what he actually says.
He says, "For lucky best wash, use Mr. Sparkle. Oh, no, your best wash. I'll get you dragged out
now,
perfectly.
As far as I'm aware, the Japanese he uses is legit Japanese, but part of it is mixed in with slang or like English or Japanese to English slang, so
I think there's a bit of
washu.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. I was going to say the same thing. I think washu is a bit of English at the end there. Besto washu. It sounds like a
yes.
bit of an English Japanese hybrid there.
Yeah, mainly because again, I'll get a bit obsessed and look at what's Korean culture like? What's Japanese culture like? Because it's a whole different world between me and itself there. And they will do a lot of stuff like, if the gaijin, if you're over as a gaijin or a foreigner there, these are ways to get served in a restaurant. So the word for beer in Japanese is something else, but you can say biru, and that's just like a little slang go between there, and they'll understand you. So I was able to pick up little bits here and there, like your washu and all that is your English-Japanese mix.
Homer's not impressed with the ad, though.
No, he's not. But that doesn't make sense. How dare they still steal my face there? Like, he's none the wiser. And it turns out it was a coincidence, Sash, there. And I'll let you say some of your fave bits here.
Yeah, so we learn that Mr. Sparkle is a joint venture of Matsumura Fishworks and Tamarubichi Heavy Manufacturing Concern. Their logos are a fish and a bulb, respectively. And they sort of merge together on the screen to fusion dance style to give us the Mr. Sparkle that we see. As Lisa says, it was all a coincidence. And then another of my favourite lines in the series that lived in my head rent-free and has now become a term of endearment between Tyler and myself. Yep, there's your answer, Fishbulb. So good. So good.
Boring.
didn't explain anything. All I know is they stole my face and used it for their stupid logo. There's no other explanation.
Wait, look!
Mr. Sparkle, a joint venture of Matsumura Fishworks and Tamarabuchi Heavy Manufacturing Concern.
Hey, it was all a coincidence.
Yep, there's your answer, Fishbulb.
Well, it was a good ride while it lasted. Come on, kids. Let's go home.
We are home.
That was fast.
And Homer, just to put a bow on it, like he knows he's living inside a TV show, goes, "Oh, well, that was something. Come on, kids, let's go home."
And Bart goes, "But we are home."
Oh, that was fast.
So good. Perfect delivery. Did you say that was your favourite bit of this episode?
It's one of. It may be. I'll see where I put my fave jingle cue in here. I'm definitely sticking the audio in regardless.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's just the fact he's so like, "Oh wow, that was quick." Like, he's so defeated and empty. And again, like Castellaneta, like, I love it when Homer's like in the B plot, because it just raises, like, what's it? A rising tide raises all ships. And Homer in like the B plot position always does that with my favorite episodes.
Mm-hmm.
He does it in my absolute favorite one of all time, which I won't say. I'll leave as a surprise there. But Homer in a B plot is amazing. And just, it really resonates with me, like, especially I'll be talking with a colleague or like someone who's a lot younger than myself. "Oh, you know what you love? I appreciate you like your US office young person, but let me tell you about Phoenix Nights." "Oh, okay, that sounds cool, Tyler." "Oh wow, it was over 20 years old." "Oh, that's old." Like, it's the same delivery I'd have for that. Like, "Oh wow, that was so long ago."
Oh my gosh. No, literally.
We're back with Marge solving yet another problem. Captain McCall said, "You got to accept your Game Boy's at the bottom of the ocean." Arr.
Great.
Poor guy.
Really dates this episode too. It's a bit of a nice little bit of a period piece there.
Oh, it does.
That and all these cord phones as well.
Yes, you're right. As we get a phone call from Ned to Marge. He's got an issue. There's some damn teens loitering outside the leftorium there, and he just doesn't trust them. And Marge, maybe the pal's gone to her head a bit, who knows? She has a very militant bit of advice, and, "Well, you've got to take no shit, and you've just got to tell them to vamoose there if they're causing bother," when they're just loitering around. And as much as, like, I've realised the terror of teenagers in public there, they are just loitering, they're about to move on, and Flanders just goes outside and goes, "Fellas, I was just wondering if you could, you know, vamoose," and he adds the hands to it, and the bullies are just not taking this shit. So Marge gets a second call back, and has the situation de-escalated, Sash?
It has not, not at all. It's getting worse, if anything else. Yeah, instead I can't work out what Ned is standing on. Is he standing on a table?
I think, or maybe one of the props where you stick your items you're going to sell in a shop.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's standing...
One of the stands, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's standing on some kind of store furniture item, the phone cord stretched out. Yeah, it's escalating. They are now riding around in more miniature bikes. Very intimidating. Yeah, it's not looking good for Ned.
No, and the fact Marge just goes, "Oh, well, you gotta have more gumption." "Yeah, but they're on their motorbikes." And, "Oh, fine, let me talk with the lead boy." And then he's, like, actively saying, "Lads, you've got a call here," before he gets snipped off. Like, he's still very friendly.
Right.
About getting teased and bullied. He'll never quit. Oh.
Classic Ned. Classic Ned. The characterisation in this episode is so spot on.
Some time has passed there. It's very early morning. Maud comes to the Simpsons house and says, "Oh, hi, Marge. Let me just ask, did your husband come home last night?" Marge goes, "Yeah, of course, why?" "Oh, well, mine didn't." And I burst laughing at this. Just smash cut to Flanders going, like fucking Mad Max getting chased by these teens on a bike. I think if it's anyone else than Flanders, but the fact that he's this sweet, wholesome man getting bullied and just like not standing up for himself like a normal human being. Fucking amazing, Sash.
It's great. I love the gun in animation for him as well. Like the floppy arms just really adds to it. So good.
We're in our final act now. Marge has stuck Flanders in a pickle there, so she confides in Reverend Lovejoy. But he just thinks, oh, he's been having his little sap thing. Oh, what happened? Did he swallow a paperclip? No, he's disappeared. Like, oh my God, I gave bad advice. Where do the helpers go when they need help there? And great gag, but I just want to say, just lovely little bit of, you know, the light, the divine spirit finding Lovejoy again there. And he smiles. It's a nice little warm bit. Like, you know, his call to action there. But it turns out the uplifting organ is just Marge plonked her ass on the Casio. Oh, sorry.
This is great. This is such a fun fake out. Definitely is. I enjoyed that too.
Mm. It's almost up there. It's not. It's a bit close, but I think my favourite one of those is, and Sash will know exactly what I'm on about. Wallace and Gromit, Curse of the Were-Rabbit, when the townsfolk find out about, it's a potential beast! And then you just hear, like, organ over, and everything's cyclical, folks. Fucking Peter Kay's cop character going, hey, give over! And the little pension woman just shuts the organ down. Fucking great.
Oh, so good. We love an organ-related joke. We love organ humour.
We do. And you might as well say it now. And pun-related humour, do you want to say your best bit about the were-rabbit?
Oh, I was... Since? No, I was literally just thinking... I wonder
you've got to enable them, folks. You've got to enable people.
I was literally just like, oh, I wonder if Tyler will let me share my favourite jokes from Curse of the Were-Rabbit, or if that's too off-topic. So, like, I'm amused that you read me mind so succinctly. That's it. We've been friends for too long. too long now. Oh my God, no. So, I mean, that is an excellent bit, but my favourite joke from Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and possibly my just favourite joke in anything ever of all time, is when they're talking about how to kill the were-rabbit, and it's the priest kind of explains it, and he's like, you know, with a gold bullet, it's 24 carat. And then just, like, kind of snickers. Oh, it's so funny. It's, like, one of my favourite deliveries of jokes ever. Like, you really have to be there. Just watch that movie because it's so good. But, yeah, it makes me cackle every time.
Please, everyone watch it. It's fantastic cinema, regardless of it, you know, being stop-motion animation and that. And funnily enough, whenever Sash tells me a real-life pun when we're in person, I have the exact same reaction in that scene. Oh, get out of my way, stupid vicar. And Sash has the exact same smile.
Oh, so no. It's literally textbook. Like, this is us, 100%. Thanks for indulging me there, Tyler. I appreciate it.
So, we get a call to the basement with Lovejoy, you know, being a man of action now. Church, basement. And Flanders has managed to get to a payphone. Oh, the teens have been chasing me all night. They've stopped to gas up their scooters. I don't know why, but just the fact you see, I think maybe it's because they're little bikes, or the fact that Flanders has not thought, right, I'll run or I'll hide. No, I'll let the boys have a break and then we'll continue running. Like, how many times has this happened during the night? For fuck's sake.
Right.
He's letting them gas up the scooters there. And Ned, you know, where the hell are you? Can you see? Oh, I can't see the sign, but the price is 1.49 and eight tenths.
Eight tenths? Yeah, well...
Daddy's discount gas! Yeah.
I love slightly getting ahead the cut to where they pull up. Lovejoy's driving, and he pulls up with all the Simpson family in the car, and you know, Homer like kind of lets Marge get out, and he goes, "Thanks for swinging by the house, Reverend." And I know it just made me laugh that they like drop by to pick up Homer and the kids.
Well, yeah, because it's otherwise the thing of why you'd explain. Well, why did they bring the kids and Homer there when they could have just left the church basement?
It's just funny as hell that like we're having a crisis, but we're gonna go and pick up Homer and the kids, you know, just nice little pause in the middle, just hilarious. The implications.
Marge asks, oh, Donnie, did you see any teens on scooters? I see a lot of things. Did you see that? Yeah. And just points to the zoo there where the kids end up getting bored on the mini motos, so they just drive off. Well, you know, we showed him, how dare he try to defend his business, so they piss off there.
There's a great line. That's one of the ones.
Go, go, go.
Sorry. another line from this episode that lived in my head went for you. It's like, I'm sleepy. Let's go to school. Just so stupid. That's so funny.
Oh, yeah, you can tell they're the bad kids not giving a fuck. Yeah, of course yeah. They'd use school to sleep.
Exactly. Just a great line. Just, again, just great delivery, you know, just candid, like, it's hilarious, but they don't linger on it. It's just funny.
So Flanders is hiding behind some sort of a shrub, and he thinks, oh, thank God, the ordeal was over. And then, I tell you what, if you're, like, quite young, like, minus 10 watching this episode, I can understand you being fucking terrified, because this is essentially some kind of mini jump scare. You see this baboon just come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
The audio on it, the scream's really loud. And this is it. Big Frank Welker is the guest voice for the baboons.
Oh, nice. Cool.
If you don't know who Frank Welker is, if you heard any kind of animal in any kind of animated film or series, that's Frank Welker.
Oh.
Ever since, like, the mid-80s.
Sick. The more you know. That's really cool.
Yes. So, Santa's Little Helpers growls. Him. Nibbler's growls in Futurama. Him. Like, think of any animated animal. It's him doing the noises. Because he can just do guttural, very animalistic noises. And he's got a hell of a pension, folks.
Oh.
He's doing that much work. He's amazing.
I bet. I mean, there's always going to be a need for animals. I just want to point out that the Simpsons predicted Harambe right here.
Oh, fuck's sake, Sash. Between you and me, I thought I'd be the one mentioning that, but okay, yeah. Speaking of memes, you're damn right. I mean, it's not a child, it's a grown Christian man.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, you can edit that out or keep that in. But
Get to BuzzFeed, Sash. Go.
Oh, yeah.
Go. Yeah, so you're hearing all these screams. Before they find out where Ned is, we get a last little flutter of Mr. Sparkles. Homer gets recognised by these Japanese tourists. And what a respectful man, konnichiwa. Like, even knows greeting in Japanese. What a sensible fellow. But we find out the screams are coming from Bamboo County, USA. So they go right over there, and they indeed find Ned up Shit's Creek without a paddle, swinging in the tire, trying to avoid the death of oncoming baboons. And, can you give me some of the examples of how to deal with the baboons, as advised by the Simpsons family?
And then you can pick your favourite one. I don't actually know what's accurate. Play dead! No! Gonna go out in circles! No! Act like a lion! Swipe at the dominant male! Come on, Ned! Knock that monkey down!
That's my favourite one, Sash, because it's like Marge has gotten confidence and enjoyment out of her new hobby that it's still rubbing off on her. And it's like, oh no, I've still got a bit left in the tank. No, have a fucking swing at that monkey, Ned. What are you, pussy? Come on. Have a go at him.
It's
Do you have a fave?
Oh, that advice? I don't know. I love Marge's delivery of a swipe at the dominant male or whatever. Just kind of made me laugh to see the variety of stuff. Don't think there's really any good way to get out of a situation like that, but, you know, get everyone Lovejoy to save you.
It's odd as well, because, like, that's not in Marge's nature any other episode, but because, I don't know, I like Marge in this, because, I mean, I guess I'll briefly speak on it now, but the last episode you were on, it was Lisa-focused, and you succinctly talked about, and, you know, very well so as well, how Lisa doesn't really win in episodes or have a positive reach or victory, I believe. So what do you make of, like, typical Marge episodes and how she's represented there? Because, like, as much as she gave bad advice there, overall, she spurred the Reverend on to do this great saving act there. So this is a big positive for her. Is this typical of most Marge-centric episodes, or is she like Lisa in that she doesn't really get a victory? Or
yeah, I've read the same article as you, I think, about the Simpson women never really getting a victory, and how frustrating that is once you notice it. I don't know, I think this is a sensible conclusion to Marge's arc in this episode, because we've had the kind of, you know, more or less, like, cheerful, passive, non-aggressive advice so far Oh, you know, just talk to them, or, you know, oh, just, you know, tell the truth, but do it in a way where you don't really have to face up to it, and, you know, oh, don't be, just be nice, and so on. And I think, I know this is Marge's face heel turn moment, where she's like, no, actually, that's not going to work this time, like, Ned needs to be pushed to stand up for himself. And this is just a really logical turn for her to make here. And this is a great Marge episode. I can't say off the top of my head all the instances when she doesn't get that ending, but like, I'm happy that she has one in this episode. It's a good one. It's a good, satisfying arc that she goes through in 22 short minutes.
Yeah, well, they go to the employee, the worst employee for a zoo there, saying, well, can't you do anything? Oh, I'd like to, but, you know, oh, it's bad for the society if they don't kill him. Oh, they're going to kill him? Yeah. First, they'll eat his skin.
So gross. Amazing.
So while Flanders is busy saying his last rites and sweating bullets there, we get the best slash the lamest rescue ever, because of course it's Reverend Lovejoy. Of course he's on a fucking train. He loves him. Gives a little choo-choo as well. Entrust your hand to mine, Ned. And, yeah, I'm queuing it in. This is my favourite bit and the very end as well, folks, there. Because not only is it great animation, you know, Reverend Lovejoy's the hero there. He gets to kick ass, literally, with some baboons. Get away, you heathen baboons! And gives them the business. Saves Flanders. This is bang on, like, one of my fave game series, Yakuza. Have you heard of it, Sam?
You, only through you, and I don't know much about it. Is there a similar scene in Yakuza?
Sash, in every single Yakuza game,
yeah,
there's a big, overly elaborate, over-the-top fighting quick-time event sequence.
Oh!
In the maddest scenarios you can think of. One of them includes, in the prequel one, the protagonist, Kiru, is with people he's trying to save. He's in a little 1 litre car, folks. Imagine a Citroen C1. And he's busy shooting a rocket launcher out the sky in a helicopter. If you go to Yakuza 4, there's a fella who escapes a prison and has to fight a bear in the snow, and he wins. And it's like a 10-foot bear. So it's full of... Oh, and in Yakuza 2, he ends up taking on a tiger and knocking it out with a spiral kick.
Nice.
That's a whole boss in itself. I'll have to link you some of these YouTube walkthroughs.
Please do.
It's a mad series, and it's very Japanese, folks, so it's all cyclical again.
It is. And
fire.
Oh, here we are. And my question to bring it back to you is how enthusiastically would you play a Simpsons game with this particular scene right here on the episode as a quick time event?
Oh, give me the money.
Oh yeah.
Give them the money straight away. Oh, if you can do a Simpsons universe with the Yakuza, like, Dragon Engine game mechanics, fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like won awards for its game mechanics as well.
Yeah.
So just Homer, Reverend Lovejoy, and Ned Flanders going into, like, Dragon mode to fight, or, like, Beast mode to fight and to kick the shit out of people with bins and all that. Oh, just everyone play Yakuza. That's my big ad for this. This is just an excuse. Everyone, please buy Yakuza.
This whole podcast episode is just a Yakuza propaganda post. There you go. Unpaid sponsorship. They should.
Onkamos for 20% off.
Oh, yeah.
Checkout.
There you go.
So Flanders thanks Lovejoy for helping him. No, don't thank me. Thanks Marge Simpson. She's the one that showed me that, you know, being a minister isn't just about ignoring people. He's found his light again. He's found his passion again, Sash. Unfortunately, they've got to go around the track again. I forget about that each
me
time.
Me too.
They go through leaving Bamboo Town, USA, entering Bamboo Town. It's like, oh, fuck.
I love that bit. It's great. Again, just like really breaks the tension of the moment in the best way. Yeah. Like, the pacing on this episode is fantastic. I also just love Elisa's, oh, those poor monkeys, and Marge's very matter of fact. They started it.
Yeah, love her.
Perfect bit of characterisation. But yeah, no, great. I totally forgot about that bit at the end as well. Just one last little gag in there before the final scene. So good.
And then we wrap the episode with an infused Reverend Lovejoy now, full of piss and vinegar, recounting the events. I'll add it here, but I just like doing Mr. Lovejoy. So the baboons to the left, baboons to the right. Biff, baff, I gave him a bit of that, and I put him away like two hairy footballs. And then brilliant monkey impression by Harry Shearer here, giving it the...
Baboons to the left of me, baboons to the right. The speeding locomotive tore through a sea of inhuman fangs. A pair of the great apes rose up at me, but biff, bam, I sent them flying like two hairy footballs. A third came screaming at me. And that's when I got mad.
Now that's religion.
And that's how we end the episode there. Sash, my word, it's one of your absolute favourites, so... I can assume what you're going to give, but please, could you give your final thoughts as to why this episode holds a place in your heart and your own unique rating out of 5, please?
Yeah, for sure. I just really cannot sing the praises of this episode enough. It's, you know, classic Simpsons. It's pacing's excellent, great jokes, great exploration of a character that we don't really see very much in Lovejoy. Marge gets a great arc. Just some really funny stuff. Fond memories as well, the nostalgia factor. But I will give this 5 hairy footballs out of 5. What about you, Tyler? What you got?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
So 100% fresh. Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, for me, this is... I guess a hidden classic, because I don't see it get promoted much on social media, meme pages, what have you, fan pages. So, it's golden era. It's a load of fun. There's heart to it. We get to see a tertiary character have arguably their best episode. For me, personally, though, second best Lovejoy kind of iteration here. Him going through this struggle and coming out the other side a better man. My absolute favourite is, the Joy of Sect, essentially the Scientology episode.
The what, sorry?
You know the episode where they all get hoodwinked to join that big religion? Speaking of religion episode, the Joy of Sect, the Movementarians.
It's not the one with the alien in the mall, is it? No, the angel in the mall. That's a completely different one. I cannot remember this one at all.
No. I'll have to link you, but...
Please
Lovejoy
do.
Lovejoy is excellent in that, as far as, like, jokes per minute, and he's more this... desperate reverend who can't get his customers back, essentially, is what they are. So this is a more wholesome Lovejoy to the desperate one I prefer in The Joy of Sect. But he's great in this. Marge is great. Homer's... That B-plot is so creative and inventive, and it's resolved in a nice little package, as Homer would once say. The only thing I'd say is I wanted a tiny bit more of the Mr. Sparkle subplot. Give me one more scene. I'm not asking for it to be its own individual episode. Just give me one more scene, because it got wrapped up at the halfway point. I didn't realise, like, pacing-wise, it's grand, but, like, the B-plot wrapped up so early. I could have done with, like, 2 Mr. Sparkle scenes in the final act, but that's just me, you know, doing a bit in it.
What would you...
Selfishly doing so.
What would you have put in? Do you have any ideas?
I don't know. I'd have more of him getting recognised, going to, like, and it sounds like, and especially at the time, maybe the jokes wouldn't have been completely PC, but have him going to Chinatown or Japantown in Springfield and having a load of scenes, him getting recognised and him trying to hide.
That could be
like,
good.
Maybe something like that. But then I'm just thinking, ooh, what would the jokes be like?
I guess.
Late 90s.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That makes sense. I guess for me, the only other gag I would think to add is... Homer throwing the empty Mr. Sparkle box and it kind of like hitting the baboon in the eye just in time to save Ned or something like that.
Oh, there you go. Tie it all together, Sash.
That's how I'd do it, but that's just me.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, damn. your genius has thrown me now. So with all that being said, overall... I'll give it a 4.5. I'll be a bit mean. I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. Banishing to the land of wind and ghosts. Can you not see that I'm serious, Sash? Join me or die.
Oh, yes. I accept your challenge, Mr. Sparkle.
Come to Uncle Mo's for family fun. It's good, 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 good.
Mmm, sounds good.